Last week we started a discussion about the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah and how relevant their impact has been for all Jews, for all generations. We didn't have a chance to talk about the rest of the Mishnah, which was the lessons that we were taught by the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, and that's what I'd like to focus on today. My original plan was to focus on all three of the sayings of the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah in our Mishnah, but then as I got more into the depths of understanding of what this Mishnah is really about, I see we're probably only going to get through one of them today, and hopefully next week we will continue. So if we look in our Mishnah, we're told, Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, who received the Torah from the Nevi'im, who got it from the Zakenim, who got it from Yehoshua ben Nun, who got it from Moshe Rabbeinu himself, who got it from the Ribono Shel Olam himself. So we're told that they taught us three lessons. And the first is the one that I'd like to focus on this morning, and that is, Havei Misunim Badin. You see it on the top of your page. Havei Misunim Badin means that you have to be careful and you have to be calculated when you are adjudicating a case. And Rashi writes in his commentary on Pirkei Avos that this instruction that we're given here in our Mishnah is really directed at a judge. When you have a judge who is asked to adjudicate between two parties, who is asked to run a Din Torah, and now he has to issue a ruling, so the Mishnah tells us, Havei Misunim Badin. You have to be very careful and very calculated in how you give over that ruling, in how you pass over the judgment to that individual. So this is a very interesting instruction because the Rambam writes as follows. We have a pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim where the Torah tells us, Lo sasu avel bamishpat. One is not allowed to distort, one is not allowed to pervert the justice system. Says the Rambam, what exactly does that mean? How do we interpret that halacha? What does it mean not to distort or pervert the justice system, the legal system that we have? The Rambam writes, and we'll read it together, look at the first entry, Zeha ma'aves es hadin. This is somebody who distorts the halacha. Umezake es hachayiv, and you now say that the guilty party is innocent. Umechayiv es hazakai, and you say that the one who is innocent is now guilty. That's rule number one, says the Rambam. That's what the Torah means when it says, Lo sasu avel bamishpat. You are not allowed to pervert the justice. Even though you're saying the reason why you're doing it is because this one is a very important political figure, and this one is a leader of the community, and therefore the ramifications, if I give it, otherwise is going to be horrible, it's going to be negative, it doesn't matter. Lo sasu avel bamishpat means you have to be honest, you have to be straightforward, and you have to present the Torah exactly in the way it is supposed to be presented. You cannot make all kinds of other side calculations. Now the Rambam continues, and here is a very important halacha. V'chein hame'ane es hadin. So too, says the Rambam, you would be in violation of this prohibition of lo sasu avel bamishpat if you were me'ane es hadin, which means you dawdle around and you linger in the process of judgment. Umarich bidvarim habarurim. If anyone is a lawyer or if anyone's ever been involved in a case, you know that sometimes this happens. You go to court and a lawyer just starts talking and a judge is listening and the lawyer just keeps on talking even though we know that there's nothing to talk about. We know there is no case, but he just keeps on talking. Says the Rambam, this is a prohibition that the Torah warns us against. To be marich bidvarim habarurim, to delay a case when you know the outcome so clearly, and the reason why you're doing it is kedei litzayer echad mibale hadinim. You're doing it in order to aggravate, in order to upset, and to demoralize one of the sides. Says the Rambam, that is something that is bichlal ma'avel. That is part of this perversion, that is part of this corruption of the justice of the legal system, and that is something that we're not allowed to do. The Shulchan Aruch writes that as well. Tzarech hadayin lifsok es hadin miyad. You have to issue a ruling immediately. Once it becomes clear to you, you have to give over that ruling because you know that the other side is going to be distressed, they're going to be nervous, they're going to be anxious, and they're going to be waiting to hear the answer that you give. And therefore, the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch both tell us that you have a responsibility and you have a sacred and solemn obligation to give over that ruling, to give over that psak as soon as it becomes clear to you. Now, this halacha is extended way beyond the courtroom. The Shalah HaKadosh, who was one of the great, great tzaddikim who lived in the 1500s and the 1600s, says that this carries over not only in a beis din, not only in a courtroom, and it's something that's applicable not only to a judge, but he says that it applies as well to any leader, to a rabbi. For example, One day, you have a milchig spoon that falls into your fleishig chicken soup, and you don't know what to do. You call the rabbi. The rabbi says, I'm not in the mood to answer right now. You leave a message. You tell him what's wrong. What is the responsibility, what is the obligation of that person that you inquired with to get back to you? Can they just wait around to figure out whenever they're interested in calling you back? Meanwhile, you're sitting nervous and anxious at home waiting to see what's the story with my kitchen and how could it be I put the wrong silverware into the wrong dishwasher and everything got all mixed up and you're very anxious and you're very nervous. Says the Shalah HaKadosh, this halacha applies to that case as well. Because he says we know that such a person in such a situation is extremely nervous, even though it might not be the biggest deal. In the end of the day, all that you're going to lose potentially is a spoon or a fork or a pot. Those are all replaceable items. But yet, says the Shalah HaKadosh, if you know that the other party is going to be anxious, you have an obligation to respond to them as quickly as possible. Now, if you're involved in other things and you're too busy to call back, that's acceptable. But if you're doing it just because you say, you know what, this person needs to learn a little bit of patience, and this person needs to learn that I'll call them back when it's convenient for me, and I'm not going to respond to them immediately when they call, that says the Shalah HaKadosh is something that we don't have the right to do. That is part of this prohibition of Lo Sa'asu Avel Bamishpat. If you just take that a little bit further, because most of us, I assume, are not rabbis, and most of us are not really sitting on a Beis Din either. Most of us are not judges. But I think if you take it to a very practical reality, it would mean the following. If you are a doctor, and you have taken a test, and you've taken a lab, and you need to get back to a person with lab results, how often do we know a person is sitting anxiously waiting for that call from the doctor, and the doctor says, I'll call them after the weekend, I'm not interested in doing it now, even though you know the results already. How often do we know that you ask a lawyer to look into something on your behalf, to research an issue that you're nervous about, and the lawyer decides to call you back whenever they want? How often do we know that a parent tells a child, I'm going to do this for you, I'm going to do that for you, and we decide as parents, we'll get to it whenever we're interested in doing it. But to our children, it makes a difference. We promise them we're going to do something, we promise them they deserve something. We cannot just leave an individual hanging. You cannot just say, I'll do it whenever I'm interested in doing it. This is part of that general prohibition of Lo Sa'asu Avel Bamishpat. There's a fascinating exchange between two contemporaries in the 1800s. And that was the Maharsham, who lived in Berjan. I don't really know where Berjan is. But the Maharsham lived, it was somewhere in Europe. And he corresponded with his friend, the Aderes. The Aderes was a great Talmud Chacham who used to live in Panevish. And then he was invited to become the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim in the end of the 1800s. He ended up passing away very shortly afterward, and he didn't really have such a long career as being the chief rabbi in Yerushalayim, but he was also the father-in-law of Rav Kook. So the Aderes sends a letter to his friend the Maharsham back in Europe, and he says, I've now accepted this position in Yerushalayim, and I'm very nervous about it because there are so many Jews that I'm responsible for, and there are going to be lines of people waiting outside of my house every single day waiting to ask me all kinds of questions about Jewish life. And I'm concerned, because I don't sleep a lot at night, and because of that, I choose to take a nap during the day. Do I have a right to take a nap during the day when I know that there are people waiting outside? And as a result of my personal preference to nap during the day and sleep less at night, people are going to have to wait outside of my door. This was the question he sent to his friend, to his contemporary in Europe, to the Maharsham. Fascinating question. And the Maharsham discusses the whole issue, whether or not by strict letter of the law he has an obligation to answer or not. But then look what the Maharsham writes back to his friend. This is at the end of the second entry on the sheet. If you look at the three dots at the very end of the paragraph, he writes as follows. This is the Maharsham telling a personal anecdote about himself back to his friend. He says, do you have a strict obligation to answer the door when you're busy? No. Do you have an obligation to say, I'm not going to nap during the day? I don't think so. However, he says, I can say about myself the following. Hashem Yisbarach Yodea. God knows. Ki ani ba'ani, he said, the humble me. Kama pa'amim his harti has been a besi. Many times I have warned my family and I have instructed them. Shem yavo mi lisho be'emsa achila oshina. If somebody comes and knocks at the door with an inquiry, while I'm sleeping, or while I'm in the middle of eating, Lo ya'akvu, don't make them wait at the door. Ela yaviu lefarai, wake me up. Stop me from eating immediately. O yakitsuni ki yafachei levavi mi maimer hazeh, because I live with a fear that I'm going to violate this prohibition of lo sasu avel bamishpa. If I know the answer and I'm able to provide an answer for somebody, what right do I have to decide that they need to wait? A leader needs to have that extra sensitivity to show people, this is the respect that I have for your question. And yes, it's an inconvenient time for me, but it doesn't matter. If I'm able to provide you with some comfort, if I'm able to give you a little bit of a response to a question that's bothering you, to something that is distressing you in some way, I have to do whatever I can. I once read a story about the great Rav Henkin. Rav Henkin was the Gadol Hador in America before Rav Moshe Feinstein came around. So Rav Henkin once gave smicha to a student of his, Rabbi Levine, who lived in Philadelphia. And he told him that your smicha is contingent on three factors. And if you violate any of these factors, he said retroactively, your smicha is revoked, and you can never tell anybody that you're a student of mine. What were those three issues? The first one, I would have chosen three very different ones, but this is what he chose. The first one, he said, is when you have a congregation, you are not allowed to have anybody eat before Tekiyah Shofar on Rosh Hashanah. No Kiddush on Rosh Hashanah. Okay. Second one was, he said, when you daven every day and the chazan gets up to Gal Yisrael, you'll notice in some shuls, the chazan says it softly, and people cannot answer amen. He says, if they do that, your smicha is revoked. In your shul, the chazan has to say Gal Yisrael out loud, that everybody should be able to answer amen afterward. And the third thing that he told him was, as a rabbi, you are not allowed to ever be Mekabel Shabbos early. Why not? He says, because the nature of your obligation to be a rabbi is that you must be available for your people. And if you're going to be Mekabel Shabbos early and half of your community is still coming home from work, who's going to answer the phones in those hours before Shabbos when you already accepted Shabbos upon yourself and now you can't answer the phone? And he told him that you have an obligation to make yourself available. And that means that you're not allowed to make early Shabbos because that will preclude you from answering people's questions. How amazing. How amazing it is. What a perspective. But the reason why he took this so seriously is because that's the obligation of a person who's in a position of leadership. And it means, says the Shalah HaKadosh, not only a judge, not only a rabbi, but anybody who's in a position to give comfort to another human being. That means sometimes a parent, it means sometimes a doctor, it means sometimes a lawyer, it means any professional, where somebody is waiting on the other line for you to get back to them, and they're anxious, and they're relentless because they want so much to hear the answer from you. This is something that if you know how to relieve them of that stress, you have an obligation to do so. So putting all that in context, we come back to our Mishnah, and we're told a very fascinating comment. Lo sasu avel bamishpa, we just learned, means you have to respond immediately. But yet our Mishnah warns us, hevei misunim badin. You have to be careful. You have to be deliberate. You have to be calculated when you respond, which means that as much as we have an obligation to respond to people's inquiries as quickly as we can, we also have to make sure not to be impulsive. We have to make sure not to rush. And it's instinctive of a human being to want to respond immediately and to show how much they know and to show how intelligent they might be. But the Mishnah here tells us that we have to be thorough and we need to be meticulous, we need to be comprehensive, and one has to be very precise when they give answers to people who inquire with them. You cannot just flippantly say, this is the answer, before you look it up and before you carefully research and make sure that you are methodical and accurate in the answers that you are providing. And therefore the Pesachei Tshuva writes that he feels it's irresponsible for a person who's asked a question in halacha to respond without at least looking it up quickly before you respond. Which means, if it's something that takes a little bit of time to research, a little bit of time to look into, that's what one needs to do. And one should never be afraid to say, I don't know. One should never be afraid to say, I'll get back to you. That is an obligation that we have, and that is what the Mishnah here is trying to teach us. Hevei misunim badin. Our children sometimes ask us questions. Many of us have far more life experience than they might have. And we instinctively answer based on our life experiences, not because we're so well educated, just because we think we know the answers. And very often we're wrong. Very often we're not giving them the proper answer. We're not really correct in the response that we give. And we need to be careful that whenever we give responses, it cannot be flippant. It has to be respectful of the person who is asking. And Lo Sasu Ava Bamishpat also has that counterpart, which is our Mishnah of Hevei Misunim Badin. When you respond to those who inquire with you, it has to be done very carefully and very respectfully with a detailed answer and one that is very accurate. The Netziv points out in his commentary on the She'iltos, isn't it strange? This would be, in my opinion, such an obvious point that anybody should know. Hevei Misunim Badin, that you should be patient in the way that you respond to people. And the Netziv wonders why, if that's the case, is it something that only shows up at the time of the Anshei Knesset HaGedola? So we have the Anshei Knesset HaGedola, as we learned last week, who were living through the Churban Beis HaMikdash. They were the ones instrumental in building the second Beis HaMikdash. Why was it necessary for them to teach us this lesson of being deliberate and calculated in our judgment, in our responses? Explains the Netziv as follows, and he says that in the days of Shlomo HaMelech, they had a Beis HaMikdash. And because they were living at a time of a Beis HaMikdash, they were so overly exposed to Kedusha and to God Himself, they had such a clarity, such a transparency of every aspect of life. When somebody was asked a question, they were able to answer immediately with a tremendous lucidity. They were able to answer very clearly whatever question was being asked of them, because they knew that they had the divine intervention of God Himself. They were living at a time with a Beis HaMikdash. However, he writes, when the Anshei Knesset HaGedola saw that we no longer have a Beis HaMikdash, and now our vision is inaccurate, and our vision is obstructed, and we don't have the clarity that we once had, they go and they warn the Jewish people, Hevei Misunim Badin. From here on in, the system has to change. We need to be much more careful, because from here on in, life is going to be far more complicated and far more confusing. And we're not going to have that vision of God any longer. We're not going to have that focus that we once had. And therefore, they taught us in our Mishnah, specifically in this time period, after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, Hevei Misunim Badin. Be careful when you give a response, because life is not as clear as it once was. And one needs to be very, very vigilant over the responses that they give, because those can have consequences, and one needs to be very careful in the way that they lead their lives. It's not the same that it used to be when we had a Beis HaMikdash, says the Netziv. This is how life changed so drastically. And you will notice, we refer to our Talmud as the Talmud Bavli. What does that mean? It was written in Babylon. And there's so much intricate discussion and disagreements and machlokas and this and that, and everything was being worked out. Why did that happen? Says the Netziv, because once they went into exile and they no longer had that clarity of thought, that clarity of vision, everything changed. And now everything was up for discussion. And now we had to come into class one day and we had to discuss with our students, and everybody said their opinions, and we had to work things out. It's not like the way it used to be. When they had a Beis HaMikdash, there was such a clarity of vision, a clarity of thought, and therefore, says the Netziv, they had to frame the new way of life for us. And they said, Hevei Misunim Badin. The way we need to live life now is, we need to calculate everything, we need to discuss it, we need to debate it. Everything needs to be very carefully discussed in order to make sure we are living life in the proper way. Let us continue with the following. We spent the last 20 minutes discussing something that I would imagine is probably not irrelevant, but not as meaningful for most of us. After all, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter asks, don't we know that the Pirkei Avos were written not only for a judge, not only for a rabbi, not only for a leader, not only for a doctor, but it was written for anybody. It was written for a novice, even for a layman. It was written for everybody. Well then, asked Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, explain to me, what is this Mishnah coming to teach us for those of us who are not in a position of giving answers to other people? Hevei Misunim Adin, what relevance does that have to my life as a regular, average person in the world? What am I supposed to draw a conclusion from this Mishnah that we just read? Hevei Misunim Badin. Suggests Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, the great Baal Musar in the 1800s. What the Torah is teaching us here, what the Anshei Knesset HaGedola want to impart to us is that we need to be deliberate and we need to be mindful and attentive to every action, to every activity that we decide to do in our lives. Says Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, that's what it means. You are the judge over every action that you're going to do. Have a misunim badin. Think carefully before the next email that you send. Don't respond so impulsively. The next time somebody sends you a text message and you have the urge to respond and to write something that's a little bit nasty, and later on you're going to regret it, think carefully. Be mindful of what it is that you're doing. Be attentive. Be thoughtful of every act that you're involved in throughout the day. Think about the consequences. Think about the result. Think about the implication of whatever it is that you're about to do. And unfortunately, as human beings, we have this ability to be so inattentive and to be so distracted in the world that we live in that it makes it very difficult for us to be mindful of the activities that we're involved in. That's a tremendous challenge that we have as human beings. I'm sure we've all had that experience. When you're talking on the phone with someone and you hear them giving you pauses in the conversation that are far longer than they should be, and it becomes clear to you that they're scrolling through their email, or they're in the middle of reading something else, or they're typing up something on the computer while they're speaking to you. We've all had that experience. And then they catch themselves and they realize how disrespectful it is, so they start repeating the last word of the sentence that you said to try to bring themselves back into the conversation, and you think to yourself, you just called me on the phone. You have something that you wanted to discuss with me. It's not that it's disrespectful to a person in a position of leadership. It's disrespectful as a human being. If you call someone else and you think you want to say something that's worthy of their time, give them the attention. Give them all of your attention. Be mindful of the conversation that you're having. Don't be involved in 100 other things. And here says Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, that's what it means, Hevei Mesunim Badin. Be careful in the way that you act. Think about everything that you do. It is told about the son of the Altar from Kelim. The Altar from Kelim was one of the great Bali Musar. And his son, Rab Nachum Zev, was once asked, what is so great about your father? If you had to sum it all up in one phrase, in one sentence, what would you say is the greatness of your father? And he said, you know what's so amazing about my father? It's the fact that every time he opens his mouth to say a word, I feel like there's a sharp knife that is in his throat, that he feels if I say the wrong thing, that he feels if I don't do exactly what I'm supposed to, if I say an extra word that didn't belong in that sentence, the knife is going to cut his throat. That's what's great about my father. That every word that he says is calculated. That he never regrets anything that comes out of his mouth, like we human beings usually do. We say something and later on we ask ourselves, why did I say that? It's so often irreversible. The damage that's done is something that we cannot take back, that we cannot change. And here says Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, the Mishnah teaches us, Havei Mesunim Badin. Try as much as you can to be careful that whatever it is that you're involved with, whatever it is that you might be doing, you give it your attention. You give it your mind, you give it your thought. I saw an article last night, an article of research published by McKinsey, and I think it's an amazing testament to the generation that we're in. And it's a unfortunate reality. But they did a lot of research about multitasking. And we all know that we are growing up in a generation, or at least I'm still growing up in a generation, where we are expected to multitask. We are expected to do so many things at one time. So the article, I'm skimming through it, but it says as follows. Always-on multitasking work environments are killing productivity, are dampening our creativity, and are making us all unhappy. For all the benefits of the information technology and communication revolution, it has a well-known dark side, and that is the information overload and its close cousin, attention fragmentation. I always think to myself, I have 100 times more access to information than my father has. I have all the computer programs that help me research things. I know how to surf on the internet for anything that I'm looking for. My father's almost 80 years old. He doesn't know how to do all of these things. And he doesn't have the programs that I have. He doesn't have the resources. And I think to myself, why is it that my father, not only because he's 50 years older than I am, but why is it that my father is going to be smarter and more intelligent than I will ever be? How can that be? How can it be that I have so many more resources than he has, and I have so much more access to information? It's not because he's more brilliant. It's not why. It's not the answer. There are many brilliant people out there, many smart people. I think the answer is because he was brought up in a generation where he knows how to focus, where he knows how to give his attention to whatever it is that he's doing. And I was raised in a generation where I'm doing 100 different things at one time. And even when I'm researching something, I'm not fully in it. I'm not giving it all of my attention. And I assume many of us can relate to the same idea, to the same point. We can be overloaded with information, but it's not making us smarter. It's not making us more productive. And it's not making us more creative either. An unceasing rhythm of daily meetings, a relentless expectation of travel to connect with customers, and far-flung reaches of an organization, an inordinate number of opportunities to represent the company at dinners and events. Add to these challenges a torrent of email, huge volumes of other information, an extraordinary variety of means, from the ever-present telephone to blogs to tweets and social networks through which executives can connect with their organizations and their customers, and you have a recipe for exhaustion. That is not making people more effective. What we hope to do in this article is to help executives and their organizations by reminding them of three very simple things. First, multitasking is a terrible coping mechanism. A body of scientific evidence demonstrates fairly conclusively that multitasking makes human beings less productive, less creative, and less able to make good decisions. If we want to be effective leaders, we need to stop. Secondly, addressing information overload requires enormous self-discipline. It's very, very difficult for us to put our cell phones away. It's not because we're doing bad things on them, but it's because we are addicted to information. But it's not helping us. It's not making us wiser human beings. A little like recovering addicts. Find time to focus. Filter out the unimportant. Forget about work every now and then. We tend to believe that by doing several things at the same time, we can better handle the information rushing toward us and get more done. What's more, multitasking, interrupting one task with another, can sometimes be fun. Each vibration of one favorite high-tech email device carries the promise of potential rewards. Checking it may provide a welcome distraction from the more difficult and challenging tasks. It helps us feel, at least briefly, that we've accomplished something, even if only pruning through our email inboxes. Unfortunately, however, current research indicates the opposite. Current research indicates that multitasking unequivocally damages productivity. In practice, most of us would probably acknowledge that multitasking lets us quickly cross some of the simpler items off our to-do list. But it rarely helps us solve the toughest problems we're working on. More often than not, it's just procrastination in disguise. And this article goes on, and I think it's amazing, because they quote here a body of research that says as well that 2/3 of respondents believe that information overload has lessened job satisfaction, has damaged their personal relationships, and 1/3 even said that it has damaged their health. And nonetheless, evidence is emerging that human beings can become quite addicted to multitasking. So what is the answer, they write? Some combination of focusing, filtering, and forgetting. I think that's a brilliant way to say it. Focusing, filtering, and forgetting. And they write that it requires a tremendous amount of self-discipline that we cannot do alone. In our teams and across the whole organization, we need to establish a set of norms that support a more productive way of working, and that is to learn how to focus, to learn how to filter, how to learn how to forget information that is so irrelevant, information that doesn't help us at all. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Brachos, you look on the source sheet, Kishem shemevarchim al hahana. The same way we make a bracha on the various pleasures, on the various benefits that we get in our lives. Kach mevarchim al kol mitzvah u'mitzvah. So too we have an obligation to recite a blessing before we perform any mitzvah. Va'achar kach yaseh osa. After reciting the blessing, then we perform the mitzvah. Now says the Rambam, he explains to us why it was fashioned in this way, why Chazal constructed it in such a way. Ubrachos rabos tiknu chachamim. There are many brachos strewn about throughout the day. Derech shvach v'hodaya v'derech bakasha. That are meant to be a praise or a thanks or a prayer. Why do we have all these things? Why do we need to say Asher Yatzar in the middle of the day? Why do I need to say a Shahakol every time I take a drink? Why are all these things so important, says the Rambam? Kidei Lizkar Asabore Tamid. Because we need that wake up, we need that reminder. Because as human beings, we know that it's so easy to become inattentive. It's so easy to forget that God is a part of our lives. And therefore, says the Rambam, the way this system was designed was that we should have constant reminders throughout the day, God is still here. And you need to remember that He's the most important focus in your life. And by saying a bracha, and by building it into the system, that every Jewish person has to somehow remind themselves throughout the course of the day that God is still with me. That, says the Rambam, is a way that a person should be able to remember that every activity that I do needs to be carefully calculated. Am I doing it because it's going to make God happier? Or is this something that's going to disappoint Him? The Chovas HaLevavos writes such a beautiful comment, and he quotes from Chassid Echad. I don't know who it is, but he writes, there was a pious individual that used to offer the following very cryptic tefillah every day. And he used to say the following, four words, so powerful. Ha-makom yatzileni, may God save me, mi-pizur ha-nefesh, from being a scatterbrain. This is written hundreds of years ago. Ha-makom yatzileni, mi-pizur ha-nefesh. After I saw that in the Chovas HaLevavos, I said to myself, what a beautiful tefillah to add into my davening every day. May God give me the ability to just focus on the task at hand. It's my biggest challenge, I'll be honest with you. I live in the same generation that we all live in. When I first came to the White Shul, I remember I didn't have texting on my cell phone. That wasn't so long ago. And I went pretty long in my career there without having it. Until somebody in the presidium of the shul told me, we're coming to a time where it's unacceptable. People expect that they're going to be able to text you and you're going to respond to them. And I listened, and now I'm completely addicted like everybody else's. And I can't remember the last time that I put my cell phone down for an entire day. Just yesterday, my brother came to visit us from Baltimore, and I left my phone charging upstairs in the room for the entire duration of time that he was there in our home. And it was a struggle for me. It was a struggle for me for an hour and a half to leave my cell phone upstairs. And I thought to myself afterwards, so what did I miss? I went upstairs to go look at my phone after my brother was leaving, and I said, what did I just miss? Absolutely nothing. I had an email from probably Bed Bath & Beyond, totally irrelevant, like we all get, and I had to sift through all the silliness that all of us have to sift through every day, and I got all those silly videos that everybody gets on WhatsApp that are not even worth our time. What did I miss? But what did I gain? I focused on a family member who went out of his way to come visit me with his children, and I had a meaningful experience with him. And my mind was totally attentive to his family because I was able to get over that hurdle of my addiction. And yes, it's an addiction. It's an information addiction. We think we're going to miss something. And that, writes the Chovas HaLevavos, Hamakom Yatzileni, Mi Pizur HaNefesh. It's such a powerful tefillah, especially for us living in this generation. May God save me from my mind being all over the place. May He give me the ability to just focus on that which is so critical right now, on that which I'm doing in the now, and not have my mind in 100 different places multitasking, or trying at least to be so overly productive that I end up getting nothing done well. That's the tefillah that the Chovas HaLevavos wrote hundreds of years ago. But it's so much more relevant today. Hamakom yatzileni mi pizur hanefesh. There's a beautiful book written by Rabbi Reuven Ziegler, where he took a lot of the drushes that were given by Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, and he wrote them up in English. And in one of those articles he writes on page 195, you have it here on the sheet, we're not going to read the whole thing. But Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein goes into a discussion about the sins of every generation. And he says, obviously we all know that every generation struggles with different things, with different challenges. No two generations are the same. And we all have our problems. So says Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, who was a man who was living in our generation, who understood the problems of our time, who did not die that long ago. He understood what we struggle with today. He died within the last 5 years, so he really had an understanding of what's going on. And he asked, if we had to really zero in on the sin of our generation, on the challenge of our generation that needs our attention, that needs our focus, what would that be? And I think it's extremely relevant because now, when we enter Rosh Chodesh Elul, and Rosh Hashanah, and Aseres Yemei Teshuva, and Yom Kippur, we all try our best to focus, at least we should, try to focus on something that we think is an attainable goal for this coming year. So Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, in my opinion, helps us frame a little bit what the challenge of our generation is. What is it that we face? And what deserves our attention? And he writes the following. I believe, he says, that the sin lurking at the door of the centrist Orthodox or religious Zionist community, the danger which confronts us and which we need to be fully aware, is precisely the danger of shikha. Unlike other communities, this is a community which is not so susceptible to Avodah Zarah. We don't really hear that often of people of our community going to serve and be a part of the Buddhist religion. It's usually not what happens. We don't have attitudes that the Rambam battled against, such as superstition and gross or primitive conceptions of God. We're not such great theologians. We're not dealing with what the Rambam dealt with. Unfortunately, however, it is very, very susceptible to extended kefira or shikha. What is the great sin of our generation, says Rav Aaron Lichtenstein? It is lacking the immanent sense of God, felt so deeply, keenly, and pervasively in other parts of the halachically committed Jewish world. And he thinks this is what needs our attention. That we don't think enough about the presence of God in our world, in our lives. We all go to shul, we keep Shabbos, we eat kosher food, but how often through the course of a Shabbos do you ever think about why it is that I'm keeping Shabbos? About the God factor in Shabbos. Why is it the next time that I write a check for my tuition bill, do I ever ask myself, why am I sending my children to yeshiva? Why do I send my children to a Jewish day school? Why am I spending all this money? Is it just because everybody else in the community is doing it? Or do I understand that there's an objective here? Do I understand that there's a God factor here? Do I live life with shikha, with an inattentiveness, with just mitzvahs anashim milumada? I'll do it because this is what everybody's doing. I'll go to these restaurants because that's where everybody else goes. Not because I understand why it's important that I keep kosher. Not because I understand that this is what God wants me to do. That's what every moment of life is supposed to be. Secondly, this kind of sin crouches at the door because in certain respects, there is a certain shallowness, a certain lack of passion and intensity within our own community. We all know this to be true. Quite apart from whatever rubs off through contact with others, there is a form of shikha, a lack of total zechira, a dearth of absolute commitment which runs through much of this community. We need to be aware of this sin at the door because only to the extent that we are aware of it, will we be able to cope with it? And here he gets into a discussion that I think is a fascinating one, and one that I think we should consider very seriously. You know, every year throughout the season of tshuva, we say, ashamnu, and we bang our chest, and we feel sorry for the various things that we mention, and then we say, alcheit, and we compound it with so many different phrases. And just personally, I always feel there are certain phrases that I mention that I think are very relevant to me. And there are others that I always say, I don't know, it's in the Siddur, I'll say it, but I don't really see how it relates to my life. That's the way I look at it. And it's wrong, because obviously if you thought hard enough, you would figure out how all of them are very relatable. But there's one that I really have never considered seriously at all until I read this piece from Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. We say in the Al-Chait, Al-Chait shechatanu lefanecha bivali da'as. on the sin that I have committed, that I live life without intelligence, without knowledge. What does that mean, bivali das? And Rabban Lichtenstein writes, there are two ways to understand that. You can understand that as meaning, very simply, I sinned to God because I just wasn't being mindful. I did this prohibition because I wasn't thinking about the consequence, because I wasn't thinking about you. That's one way of understanding it. Bivali das. That's what led me to sin, because I just wasn't using my intellect, I wasn't using my mind. But the second way, writes Rabban Lichtenstein, is you can understand it as being something far more profound than that. Al chet shechatanu lefanecha bivali das means we were all created b'tzelem Elokim. What does it mean to have b'tzelem Elokim? God doesn't have a body. He doesn't have the facial features that we all have. So what does it mean I'm created in the image of God? The Rambam writes, Tzelem Elokim means that God gave me an intellect. That God gave me a mind, He gave me a brain to understand and to think and to be mindful and attentive to the world that He created me in. When we say, Al chet shechatanu lefanecha bivali das, it doesn't only mean, I'm sorry God that the reason why I've sinned is because I was not mindful of You. Is because I was not attentive to the consequences of my actions. But what it means in a far more profound way is, I have sinned to You by not fully using my Tzelem Elokim. You created me with a brain. You created me with the ability to be focused on everything that I'm doing in life. And I've sinned to You because I have not maximized that potential. Because I've lived through life trying to multitask and never focusing on that which I'm doing right now. And I say to You, God, I apologize for not using this unbelievable gift that You've given me. This gift of the intellect. We all have the opportunity to use our intellect and to maximize its potential. But we say to God, we're too busy. We're so involved in so many other things. We have pizur ha-nefesh. Our minds are pulled in 100 different directions. I'm wondering about my tuitions, and I'm wondering about how I'm going to get my kids to school, and I'm wondering about the carpools, and I'm wondering about how I'm going to go tomorrow to my business meeting, and what's going to happen with the shidduch, and what's going to happen with my this, and my shul, and my that, and everything. And I have 100 different things on my mind. And because of that, I do not maximize the potential of my tzelem Elokim, of my brain, of my most gifted part of my body. And that is the fact that You created us with das. And we say to God on Rosh Hashanah, on Yom Kippur, Aseres Yemei Tshuva, Al chet shechatanu lefanecha bivali das, that I live through so much of the experiences of my life without using that incredible gift of my mind as much as I should have. I've always been moved by an insight that is mentioned by the great Rav Moshe Feinstein. He turns our attention to Parshas Tetzaveh, where the Torah goes through a description of all the various clothing that the Kohanim used to wear in the Beis HaMikdash. Now, one of those articles that the Torah describes is something that is worn only by the Kohen Gadol, and it's referred to as the tzitz, a big golden plate on his head that says, Kodesh LaHashem. And that is meant to remind the Kohen Gadol of the divine and elevated purpose that he has. Remind yourself of why you're here, of what you are doing, of what you're involved in. Everything that you do needs to be consecrated, needs to be Kodesh LaHashem, needs to be sacred. Sounds like a fairly simple idea, but Rav Moshe Feinstein points out that this is the holiest man in the world that we're describing. This is the only human being who has the right to enter into the Kodesh HaKadoshim on Yom HaKippurim. This is the only Jew in the world who actually lives in the Beis HaMikdash. Like the Rambam says, Kvodo v'sefarto, the glory of the Kohen Gadol is that he spends his entire day in the Beis HaMikdash living there. Can you imagine? This person who lives a life of absolute submission and servitude to God, who has no life outside of a Beis HaMikdash, who speaks with God, who communicates with Him in the holiest place in the world on the holiest day, He wears a bar on his head that says Kodesh LaHashem. He needs that reminder. And writes Rav Moshe, yes, you can be living a life in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. You can be exposed to God Himself on Yom HaKippurim. You can have an experience of living in a Beis HaMikdash for every day of your life. But don't ever forget that you're a human being. And human beings get distracted. And it doesn't matter how smart you are, how holy you are, how pious you think you might be. Human beings are human beings. And even the Kohen Gadol, yes, even the Kohen Gadol needs that reminder on his head at all times. Kodesh LaHashem. What you're doing is for the sake of God. What you're doing is for a consecrated, for an elevated purpose. What you're doing is sacred and divine. And it's important that we remind you, because as a human being, it's very easy to forget. It's not because there's something wrong with you. That's just the way human beings were created. And therefore, says Rav Moshe Feinstein, this is why the Torah goes out of its way to teach us. Kodesh LaHashem is so important, even for the Kohen Gadol. If you extend his thought a little bit further, we read in the end of Parshas Mishpatim about the experience that Moshe Rabbeinu had. 40 days and 40 nights he spends up in heaven with God Himself. Look at the last entry on the source sheet where we have the following pasuk. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe. God instructs Moshe Rabbeinu and He says, Ale Elai Hehara. I ask you to come up and join me on top of the mountain. Veheyei Sham, and I'd like you to be there. V'yet Nelecha, and the reason why I'm inviting you is because on this occasion I'm going to give you Es Luchos Ha'Eben V'HaTorah V'HaMitzvah. I'm going to give you all of the instructions. I'm going to give you the 613 mitzvos. I'm going to give you all of the entirety of Taryag mitzvos and all of the Luchos. And that's why I'm asking you to come up here and spend time with me. Now Rashi there on Chumash points out, there seems to be an extra word here in the pasuk. God instructs Moshe Rabbeinu, Ale Elai Hehara, please come and join me up here in heaven, Veheye Sham, and be there. What do you mean, and be there? Obviously, if I'm coming up, I'm going to be there. So Rashi says that what God means is, Moshe Rabbeinu, you should be comfortable up here, because you're going to spend a long time here with me. So roll up your sleeves, get a nice chair, and make sure you're comfortable here, because this is going to be your environment for the next 40 days and 40 nights. And there's nowhere else to go. But one of the great Hasidic rabbis, Rabbi Yecheskel Mikuzmir, gives a very different interpretation, and he says no. How often does it happen that we're invited to go to some sort of event with a loved one? And we mark it down in our calendars, and we might arrange for babysitting if that's relevant for us. And we leave work early, and we make a reservation in that hotel, or in that restaurant, or in that sporting event, wherever it might be. And we take care of all of the necessary arrangements, and we show up. And after all the time and effort that we put into it, how often are we just not there? We show up, we come to the place where we're expected to be, but we're just not there. Our minds are somewhere else. And as much effort as we put into the evening being a special one, and making all the arrangements necessary, and making sure to have all the reservations that we need, we're just not there. I have to tell you, I go every Matzah Shabbos in the winter. Rabbi Wolf runs a beautiful program here for parents and children. And I go every week in the wintertime with my kids. It's a learning program. A half an hour you're expected to learn with your children. No big deal. I have to tell you, I was crying this year. There was a father who was sitting, a wonderful person. A father was sitting a few tables down from me. And he was sitting with his two children, with a chumash, reviewing whatever it was that they were learning in school. And I saw every time his child put his hands and his eyes back into his chumash to read the next pasuk, his father had his hands under the table typing on his cell phone. And it pained me so much to watch this. You think your child doesn't know that he's absolutely not important to you right now? So yes, you showed up to the program, you gave your child a half an hour, but what good did you do for that child? You think the kid doesn't know that you're an absent parent? That you're just not here? And yes, you have things that you need to do, and we all have things that we need to do. And I'm guilty as charged. My kids come home from school every day, I don't put my phone away. I should. And I try. But what message are we giving our children if we cannot even give them a half an hour of our attention? We make time in our schedule to go to the program with them, to go to the sporting event, to go somewhere special with them, to do something meaningful with them. And we're just not there. We show up, but we're just not there. God tells Moshe Rabbeinu, Alei Eli Hahara, I invite you to come up onto the mountain with me. But that's not good enough, God says. He adds another phrase and he says, Hey Yesham, I expect of you to give your full attention to me. I expect that you're going to understand and appreciate the moment that you're living through right now. I don't want your mind to be on the Jewish people that are down below. I know you're the leader. I know you have important things to worry about. I know they might be constructing an Egel Azel, but right now that's not your problem. Right now your focus and your attention needs to be up here. Hey Yesham, if I've invited you upstairs, that means that's where you need to be. And you have 100 other things in your life that you need to worry about? Not now. Now is not the time for it. Alei Eli Hahara Veheyesham. God even has to tell Moshe Rabbeinu the Adon HaNeviim that he needs to focus his attention. God needs to tell even the Kohen Gadol living in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, Kodesh LaHashem, big bar on your forehead. Don't ever forget. You need to give your attention to God. You need to remind yourself that He's a major force in your life. Al Chet Shechatanu Lefanecha Bevili Das. Use your mind, use your intellect. Think about what you're doing, said Yisrael Salanter. Havei Mesunim Badin. Carefully calculate before you do something, before you send that email, before you respond impulsively to someone. Be the judge over your own character. Think about the activity that you're about to be engaged in and understand what the implication is. Is it something that's going to make my life happier? Is it something that's going to make God happier? Is it something that's going to make me more productive? Or is it something that's just a waste of my time and energy? We read the story about the Jewish people standing at Har Sinai accepting the Torah. The only time in history where a human being actually had a direct communication with God the way they did on that occasion, and we're told that the Jewish people passed out from it, God revived them. And a very short time later, we find that the Jewish people are building an Egel HaZahav. Very soon after that experience, Jewish people are involved in building in Avodah Zarah. And I always wondered, probably the greatest Jewish mistake of all of our history. You just experienced a Matan Torah, Har Sinai. You just had an encounter with God Himself. You didn't forget it. How did the Egel HaZahav happen just a few weeks later? How could it be such an indefensible act? You go and you serve Avodah Zarah when you just had a communication with God Himself, the very same people who had that divine revelation. It wasn't the next generation. It was the same people. So the Medrash in Shir HaShirim gives us insight into this question. And the Medrash says as follows. We have a pasuk in Shir HaShirim where God describes His affection and His love for us. And the Medrash says, Livavtini ba'achas me'einayich. Simply translated as, you love me with one of your eyes. My father told me that the simple understanding of that pasuk is, he told me many years ago, he said, you'll see when you get married, you have such a deep understanding of your spouse, and she has such a deep understanding of you, that you don't even have to say things to each other. All you need to do is take one glance at the other one, you know exactly what they're thinking. You're both watching the same thing, you know what the other one's thinking without even asking them. The Ribbono Shel Olam says, Livavtini ba'achas me'einayich. I understand you so well, you understand me so well, we don't even have to communicate. We just wink at each other, one eye, that's enough to understand where you're coming from, where I'm coming from, what you're feeling, what I'm feeling. That's good enough. Because we have such an inextricable bond, we have such a deep relationship. We don't even have to say anything. Says the Medrash, perhaps there's an alternative interpretation to this pasuk. Nothing to do at all with our relationship with God. Says the Medrash in the fourth parak in Shir HaShirim. You know what it means? Livavtini ba'achas me'enayich. Mahu ba'achas me'enayich. What are we referring to when we say, you love me with one eye? Says the Medrash, this is a reference to the days when the Jews fell to the Egel Hazav. When the Jews fell to that terrible mistake of serving idol worship. And God says, Ba'ayin Hashenis, when you were standing at Matan Torah, when you were standing and looking at God face to face, God says, you only looked at me with one eye. You weren't concentrating. You weren't paying attention. Ba'ayin Hashenis, when you were standing at Har Sinai, your second eye was wandering. Hayu Mistaklim al Ha'egel. At that moment, standing at Har Sinai, you were already planning with your second eye how we're going to build the Egel. God says, it's because you were not fully focused. It's because you didn't understand the tremendous gravity of the moment. It's because you did not appreciate that when I'm involved in something in front of me, I need to give it my full attention. I can't just give it one eye. You can't love God with one eye. Livavtini ba'achas me'enayich is a horrible condemnation of where the Jewish people were at the time of Har Sinai. They did not give it their full attention, and because of that, just a few weeks later, this is where they ended up. Egel Azav. We'll close with one final thought, and that is a beautiful insight of the Kutzker. He says, you go back to the story where all of Jewish Galus started, and that is the story of Yosef HaTzadik. His father asks him to go and look out for his brothers. His father says to him that all your brothers went out to graze in the field, and I'd like you to go find them. And Yosef goes out, v'hine toa basada. Yosef is wandering around in the field. He doesn't know where to go. Vayishaluish leimor, and somebody, an anonymous individual, comes and he asks him, Ma tivakesh, what are you looking for? Yosef very innocently responds, Es achai anochi mevakesh. I'm just looking for my family. I'm looking for my brothers. My father asked me to go look for them. Hagida nali eifo heim roim. Maybe you can tell me, where are they grazing? Where are they with the sheep? Seems like a straightforward conversation. But the Kutzker Rebbe writes that perhaps what this means is a conversation that really is speaking to Jews living in all future generations. V'hine toe basadeh, explains the Kutzker, we all wander in the field in this confusing world that we live in, where we're inundated with information, where we're expected to multitask, where we have a million and one things that we need to take care of. And we're wandering in the field. You ever look at a person, you wonder, where are they going? What's going on? Do they really have direction in life? Does a person really have focus? And we're all just wandering. And yes, I'm keeping Shabbos, and I'm keeping kosher, and I'm doing everything I have to do, but I'm not focused at all. I'm just wandering all over the place, like a chicken without a head. Says the Kutzker. And we look for deep meaning and purpose in life. But we're completely lost. We have no direction, no sense of orientation at all. And it's then that this anonymous person comes into our life, this malach, if we're lucky enough, comes into our life and says, Ma tivakesh? What is it that you're looking for? What is your aspiration? What is your goal? What is your purpose? With all the distraction and all the confusion that you have in life, with all of the wandering in the fields that you're going to end up doing throughout the course of your life, are you a goal-oriented person? Do you ever stop to ask yourself, Ma tivakesh? What am I doing all this for? Am I mindful of the activities that I'm engaged in? Am I making them meaningful? Am I thoughtful? Am I considering the fact that God is supposed to be the focus of my life? Like David HaMelech says, Ani kirvas Elokim li tov. The greatest thing for me in my life is the fact that I have a relationship with God. How many of us can say that? How many of us ever think of that? How many of us live life in a way that is bivali das, without ever trying to refocus and reorient ourselves and figure out what is my goal? What is my purpose? Ma tivakesh? Yosef HaTzadik was asked the penetrating question of what it is that he was looking for, of what it is that he was trying to accomplish. And we need to ask ourselves the same question. Have misunim badin. Think carefully about that which you do, about everything that you're involved with. And ask yourself, ma tivakesh? What is my objective? What is my purpose? Why am I doing that which I'm about to do? Is it constructive? Is it productive? Is it being mindful? Is it being thoughtful? Is it helpful to the world, to my family, to my community, to myself? Is it doing anything that's going to further impact my life in a positive way? That's what it means when we say, Havei Mesunim Badin. This is a timeless lesson that the Anshei Knesset HaGedola have taught us. You can be the great Moshe Rabbeinu. You can be the great Kohen Gadol. But we need to build in those reminders, those opportunities for ourselves to think about the fact that we need to be reoriented every so often. That we need to remind ourselves there's a purpose, there's a goal, there's an intellect, there's a mind. And it was put there for a reason. And the reason being that God wants us to be mindful of everything that we do. He wants us to be deliberate. He wants us to be calculated. He wants us to be Jews that live life in a way in which we think about everything that we do. And here the Anshei Knesset HaGedola taught us a lesson that is not only limited to a judge, to a lawyer, to a doctor, to a medical professional, like we said before, but it is something that we can walk away with and say, yes, this year when I say the Al-Chaitz, I pledge to the Ribbono Shel Olam, I will be a more mindful person. I will try my best to pay more attention to the things that are important in life and to the things that deserve my attention. I will try and ignore the things that I should not be spending time on. And I will always ask myself that penetrating question that was asked to Yosef HaTzadik of, Ma Tevakesh? As I wander through this dangerous world and this confusing life, every so often I carve out a time and a space for myself to discuss the question of, Ma Tevakesh? What is it that I want? What are my goals? What are my objectives? And why is it that I have been put on this earth? For what purpose? And for what reason? Amir Tz Hashem, we will continue.